Get connected with Take Two Radio on Facebook or Twitter at Take Two Radio. For email updates on future shows, follow at Blog Talk Radio. For previous episodes, upcoming guests, and more, visit Take2Radio.com.
This is Dave Rowntree, co-author of the soon-to-be-released Demon Street USA, author of Paranormal Technology, an all-around science geek in the paranormal. And when I'm not doing anything, I sit around and chuckle to the antics of the Mallard Report.
The opinions expressed on the Mallard Report are those of the hosts and participants and are not intended to and do not necessarily reflect the opinions of any simulcasting radio network or sponsor. All listeners are advised to make their own decisions.
It's the Mallard Report. Yeah, the Mallard Report. The paranormal talk radio show with Jim Mallard as your host. See what lies beneath any paranormal activity. Go inside a world that others don't want to see. It's the Mallard Report. Yeah, the Mallard Report.
Welcome to the Mallard Report. Tonight's Mallard Report is brought to you by Spectrum State. Visit SpectrumState.com. I guess they're Spectre Lights and Visit Spectrum State. IR Lights, they're good stuff. Gary confirmed to me through the weekend that he'll be on board for the rest of the year. So I must be doing something right. Or, well, I'll just say I'm doing something right. It feels good to have that confirmation for the next few months, especially with the holidays coming and all that fun stuff. All right, my guest tonight, returning to the Mallard Report for the third or fourth time, Thomas Fusco, author of Behind the Cosmic Veil. How are you doing tonight, Thomas?
Hey, very good, Jim.
So, what's new? I haven't talked to you in a while. Besides...
Well, not too much is new. Of course, you know, I'll be... I think it's next week. I'll be speaking and presenting at the International Paradigm Symposium up in Minneapolis, Minnesota. Listeners can find out all about that at paradigmsymposium.com. And what I always say, Jim, it's one thing to get invited like I did last year. It's another thing to get invited back.
That had to have been quite a crowd to be part of, let alone speaking with.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'm still pinching myself, man. It's, I've been on the, as you know, even though I've made quite a splash, I've really been on the scene relatively few years compared to many of these other people. I've been, I only came out of the closet November 2011, so to speak. So it's not been quite 3 years yet. And so to be included in that roster is quite an honor.
Yeah, I had Scotty on last week. I was telling you right before we came on, and he was telling me about some of the intricacies of putting that together, and it's just mind-blowing. I can't fathom trying to do it myself, so.
Oh, yeah, it's quite a project, and there's quite a bit involved, and, I know about some of it, but not all of it, and quite honestly, I don't know whether I'd care to know all about it, you know. I'm going to focus on my part of it, you know.
As they say, I just eat the steak.
Yeah,
don't worry about what the butcher's doing.
Oh, yeah, it's... there's quite a bit involved, and my hat's off to them, that's for sure.
So what are you going to be, I mean, obviously I kind of have an idea, but what are you going to be speaking about?
Well, last year I really didn't know what I was going to do till I actually got on stage. But I think this year I'm going to, as you may know, I'm working on a new book. I tried to get it done by the, for the symposium, but just wasn't going to happen. And so my new book focuses more specifically on paranormal phenomena, whereas my previous book, my first book, Behind the Cosmic Veil, had paranormal phenomena included into it as an important body of evidence that was combined with other groups of evidence to come up with what I call supergeometric theory, this new vision of reality. So this year I think I'm going to focus more on the specifics of paranormal phenomena. And we've actually got a paranormal field presence this year, where we've got a number of people there whose specialty is the paranormal also. So it's probably more in keeping with the theme of this year's symposium.
So are you? Am I going to catch you any with some blicky things and some... No, wait. Are you going to investigate?
Yeah, there is an investigation.
Are you going?
There's what's his name? I'm so terrible with these names. Barry Fitzgerald and David Weatherly are going to stage an investigation at this location, this Woman's Club of Minneapolis. The building's 110 years old, and it's not reported as haunted or anything like that. I think they're more giving like a live demonstration as to how those things are done and how they conduct investigations and that type of thing.
It makes sense to me. It's a better place to do. It's a teaching moment.
Exactly. And, of course, you know I'm not a paranormal investigator.
I do know that.
So
That's why I was picking on you there if you were going to go or not.
I might show my face. You never can tell.
Then you can put it on your business card, paranormal investigator.
Oh, no. Oh, my. No. No, there's everybody. It's like what you were saying earlier about the butcher and just eating a steak and that type of thing. Everything's got its place and purpose, and I think that my relatively unique position in the paranormal community, which is almost kind of like an outsider looking in, gives me a unique perspective and allows me to comment on some things that people who are interdependent on relationships with other people in that community may not be able to voice pronounced as I do.
I'll post the link. I put a link together to the interviews that we had done before, because you were on a show and somebody asked if I'd ever talked to you, and instead of sending them individual links, I put it all together into one. But we spent a good part of an evening one night going through things that you could say that 90% of paranormal investigators wouldn't say because they're too close to it. So we won't rehash all of that tonight. But
no, yeah, it's one of those, in a sense, I'm almost like an armchair quarterback. So I can say things that, others may not feel comfortable saying.
But so are 90% of the people on Facebook. Never mind. Before I get in trouble.
Oh, my. Well, I'm sure before, mostly, most shows before I'm over with, I pissed somebody off, so.
Well, that's fine. Won't be the first time, won't be the last time that either one of us have done it, so. So, okay, so when did you start writing a new book? Because I have heard smatters of it, but I haven't had a chance to talk to you about it. So when did you start?
What, on the new book?
Yeah.
Oh, gosh, some months ago, earlier this year, I guess it was kind of unrealistic to think I was going to finish it in time. But, essentially what I wanted to do, Jim, was to address the specifics of supergeometric theory as they relate to the paranormal field. And so one of the things that I talk about are traditional views in the paranormal that simply don't hold up to scientific muster. And we've talked about a few of those, but I talk about a few more things as well. Another aspect of it is to clarify the idea that paranormal events, what I call primary paranormal events, which are things like AVPs, EVPs, apparitions, that these are actually materializations of information. It's that information element that the paranormal field is almost entirely ignored, except maybe with the exception of David Roundtree. And so I want to talk about that in greater detail because this is an aspect of the paranormal experience, so to speak, that most in the field aren't even aware of or give it no mind. And when you start thinking about the information that is materializing, that in itself gives you a different perspective on what might be going on than just the traditional thinking about, you know, energies and residual energies and vibrations and feelings and all these things, which are all well and good. But without the information, it actually shapes them into something recognizable and organized. You know, there really isn't a whole lot that you can gather from that.
No. And since you mentioned David, are you looking forward to watching the Ghost Stalkers, I guess is the name of the show?
Well, yes, but I don't know too many details about it. And what David told me is it's on a particular cable channel that I don't even get. So yeah, I think it's on Discover America.
Yes.
Yeah, and I don't get that channel, so I would have to figure out how I would be able to find it online or something like that. But, yeah, I'd very much like to see it.
Because I know, boy, I don't want to put this water under that bridge again, but we have had our fair share of amusement there. Nice word. With some of the other shows, so.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, I'm sure that, you know, David hasn't spoke to me too much about it, so I really don't know a lot of the details. I know he's been quite busy with it, and so I really don't even know what the content of it's going to be, what the format is, or so, yeah, I'd love to see it.
So I can barely add any more to it because he's told me just enough to be dangerous. He's gonna get to do an experiment each week during the show.
Oh, that's great.
So, you know, David and his experiments. So obviously, so I'm excited to see it because you know I've heard about these things. I've heard him talk about these things, but to actually see, I'm kind of a visual person, except I do this radio show, which makes no sense to anybody, but. I can't provide a good visual, so okay. Anyways, but if to see some.
But
well,
when
things,
you're doing a radio show, that's data going out.
Right.
When you talk about visual, that's data coming in.
That's why I have smart people on the show.
Oh well, you know what they say. Last week I couldn't even spell paranormal. Now I are one.
Oh, good grief, Tom. So.
I really hope he gets an opportunity to for two real important things, to be able to demonstrate the EMF quadrilator, which is his invention, and I consider it to be the most significant piece of equipment ever contrived or invented for the paranormal field. And the other thing is that I hope he's able to demonstrate the emergence of this gamma radiation that he finally tied down, I think, sometime earlier this year. Because these are very, very important things, and they will help lead the way to a more scientific perspective and embracing of paranormal research.
So I guess I want to bring it back to the new book for just a quick second. So how far are you? Because I know you said you wanted to have it done.
Oh, gosh. I think that I could probably have this finished by the end of the year.
Okay. I'm being selfish here. I'm just trying to figure out then. So if it's done, it goes to the editor. I'm doing my, when do I want to have Tom on in the back of my head again?
I'm still divided on whether to present this to a traditional publisher or to self-publish as I did my first book. None of the traditional publishers wanted to touch my first book, Behind a Cosmic Veil. It was just too deep, too much, too varied. It addressed too many things. Publishers want book type A that they can market to audience type A.
Right.
Or book type B that they can, market to audience B. Behind a cosmic veil is A, B, C, D, E, F, G, and Q. And so they really had no idea what to do with this or who they would sell it to. So I had to self-publish. I think I've demonstrated that, it is a saleable book. But when you have something that is specifically towards the supernatural and paranormal phenomena, or the book that I'm planning to come on after that, which is about the multiverse, now then they could say, hey, this is book type C. And we know exactly what audience we're going to market this to. So there's going to be some publishers at the Paradigm Symposium, and I think I'll have the opportunity to talk to some of them and see what they can suggest or offer.
Yeah, that's a good – because Scotty was mentioning there was going to be a couple, two or three of them there. So get busy, Tom. Get on it.
Yeah. traditional publishers can be a problem, as you well know.
Yeah.
A very good friend of mine that's involved in the field, Micah Hanks, without mentioning too many specifics, he had an idea about a book that he presented to the publisher that had published previous books. And that publisher came back and said, hey, well, that's all well and good, but we'd like to see you write a book about this instead. And this is what you can run into sometimes. In fact, I know Scotty is running into that too. So, well, this is a great idea, but we would like to see you write, UFOs and black ops in the U.S. government. And write a book on that, and we'll publish that because we know who to sell that to.
No, it's hard. Even I've run into that pitching my show to people. We wish you would talk more, or you talk too much. Or, and some of them have said you talk too much, but that's here or there.
Well, yeah, but hey, it's talk radio, and you're the host, that's why with Behind a Cosmic Veil, I published it myself, and then embarked on my own promotional campaign, which was primarily with radio interviews. I'm probably over 300 interviews, including 5 months after I started, I was on Coast to Coast AM. I was an unknown. And so that was all from my own promotional efforts. As you know, I don't have a publisher. I do not have an agent. I do not have a publicist like all these other big names do. And so what I've been able to manage to do just on my own, I just chalk it up to, hey, I must really have something that these publishers that turned down my book proposals on Behind a Cosmic Veil just didn't recognize.
I had one of those types of people. I'm not going to mention which field they're in because they're probably listening because they are a fan of the show. But once I tell the story, I'll probably give it away anyways. But I was talking to them on the other night on the phone, and they said, yeah, it's great that you don't have any of those pie people. And I said, pie people? And they're like, yeah, people that want a piece of your pie. If you have an agent or a publicist or any of those people, they want 10%, 7%. They just keep cutting your pie up, and then you get your portion of the pie, and you go, how did I end up getting 4% of my book?
Yeah, really. I hadn't heard that phrase before.
I hadn't either until they mentioned it to me. And this is one of those pie people telling me this, to stay away from having pie people.
There's a place for them.
Yes.
They're not, you are highly unlikely, unless you fall into, dumb luck, get yourself interviewed on a major television network without an agent, without a publicist. That's probably not going to happen. I got lucky with the Coast to Coast AM interview. I was just at the right place at the right time. I was pitching them at the right moment, and they had a circumstance come up, and boom, here's this guy who nobody heard from, Adam, is on Coast to Coast AM. But that's a very difficult show to get on. And I haven't been invited back yet, but I think they're waiting for me to come up with another book.
Right. Well, that's understandable. I mean, I don't know. They have their own MO, and I, hey, any guy that can host the show 5 days a week for that, what, 4 hours a night, let him do what he's got to do.
Yeah. Well, one thing's for sure, when they're ready for me, they got plenty of slots.
Yeah, that's the thing. That's a good thing. That's a good thing, though. It's a double-edged sword sometimes, but
yeah. So that's kind of what's in the works, and I'm also going to try to work in a chapter in this upcoming book that's going to be entitled "The Work of David M. Rowntree." I'm going to put a chapter in there on David and his work and his research and what it really means to the field, and you know, because that's a to me, his work is a fundamental part of the story of paranormal research. And it's not just, you know, like I say, going out to see who's got the biggest and best EVPs or somebody's going to tell the latest gook and spook story. There's a time and a place for that, but it's not really paranormal research. What David's doing, he's out in the, you know, out in the trenches there doing the heavy lifting. I'm kind of like an armchair quarterback. I sit at my desk and push a keyboard, you know.
Well, but they both have their role, though, as we were just mentioning earlier, that everybody has their place in the universe to help either define what the person's talking about or promote what the person's talking about or do the work. So.
Yeah, and there's and you're right. There is a place for both. It's like what I talk about with Albert Einstein. He never conducted any experiments. You know, all of his work was purely theoretical. It was done in his study. And so, you know, other people went out there and did the heavy lifting.
So I'm going to ask you a question somebody asked me, and I kind of danced around it because I'm not versed enough in it to know, but maybe you could help me answer the question next time somebody asks me. Are you an Einstein or a Tesla person?
Oh, absolutely on the theoretical end. In fact, David called me a visionary theorist, and it kind of stuck. But no, Tesla was a theorist, but he was also an engineer. It's very important. You know, like David Rowntree. David's an engineer. I'm strictly a theorist.
So
that's kind of, it's more along the kind of the Einstein branch of physics, so to speak.
See, I don't think I'm either. I think I'm just here for the ride and hope, trying to sponge as much in as I can, as long as I can. And yeah, every time I talk to you or David, or there's a number of smart, really smart people out there, and it's a great thing to just hear it, even though it doesn't always go through the right way the first time. But you got to hear it.
Well, Jim, there is no way that a I don't want to use the word performer, but for lack of a better word, you know, there's no way a speaker or performer can address an audience without a stage. And so there has to be a meeting place, and there has to be a stage, a platform, a pulpit from which to deliver that content that audience wants. And so somebody's got to set up the stage and put together the, you know, the event and all that. And that's what you do. That's your end of it.
Yeah, okay. I'll keep carrying that banner. So
it's an important one. You know, nobody can publish a book without a publisher. Publisher can't publish books without the guy that makes the paper.
Right.
And, you know, without the bindery and so on and so forth. The chemical company that makes the ink that they buy to put in their press.
So you're working on this new paranormal book, which has me excited because Behind the Cosmic Veil is still a little thick for me, and I keep picking it up and trying, inching forward through it. Is it going to be, I don't want to use the word easy to get through, but easier to process or am I just hopeful?
Well, it's going to be more specifically related to the paranormal. So, for example, when I talk about the materialization of information, I'm relating it specifically to, excuse me, what happens in paranormal events, instead of speaking in more broader terms as I do behind the cosmic veil. There's certainly some cosmology involved with it. We cannot get away without that unless we want to just dumb it down and, you know, publish another book of paranormal pulp, as I call it, or metaphysical fluff that people are going to buy just because it's, you know, tantalizing and, you know, it stimulates them, but it really doesn't add anything new. There's certain physics that has to be discussed. But by relating it directly to paranormal phenomena, to a one-to-one correspondence with that, it makes it a little bit easier to follow.
Not that the other one's hard to follow. I mean, just a little heavy to think about when you haven't necessarily processed those greater big picture, I mean, extreme big picture things. So
it's certainly not, I mean, what I say about Behind the Cosmic Veil, my first book, and other people have confirmed it, if you take a look at some of the reviews that I've got on these online booksellers, they've been absolutely phenomenal. The book is accessible,
right,
in my opinion, to anyone who has an average intelligence, but with an above average interest in the field, you know, in the subject matter.
Yeah, it's not that difficult word wise or anything like that. It's just the pushing it through your mind and trying to grip what you're saying, not just reading it to read it.
Yes, and you know, for example, there was just an article that has, you know, hit the media about a experiments done over the last number of years at a particle accelerator where they have gotten a really solid confirmation of Einstein's model, his relativistic model of time dilation. And, you know, so, yeah, you kind of have to try to wrap your head around the idea that a clock in motion runs slower than a clock that is relatively stationary to it. A clock at the equator runs slower than a clock that's mounted at the North Pole. And this is just the way the world is put together. And if that's difficult to get a picture of, then yeah, this kind of stuff is going to be hard. But, you know, if paranormal people who are paranormal enthusiasts think that the general public should, you know, be able to wrap their head around things that go bump in the night, I would think that's the same kind of mentality.
You have to understand, one, the even begin to present logically, keyword, to other people about these other things. So yeah, I'm hearing in my head, because you know, people are always, what time zone is that for me? When you post one time zone, you know, you have to do the math for them, most people. And now you're telling me clocks run faster and slower, and my head just probably wanted to explode just from that. Not the fact, the thought of it, because yeah, it makes sense because of the gravity and stuff, but the
space time.
Yeah, the difference in time. Just, and, you know, anytime we start talking about difference in time, just even on the surface, the very rudimentary just difference in time, like time zones, it's just like, and then you start adding the difference in actual time because of where you're located. That's just remarkable to think about. And again, here we are. I've never even considered that, you know. And then you add in something. Somebody blew my mind about a year ago on the show when they told me the water, you know, flung different directions. I guess I remembered hearing that in school, but now all of a sudden you hear it again, you go, wait, the water does flow the other direction now in the southern hemisphere, and you're going, how different, you know, how different life would be because of all the, you know, the things that you are taught now, survivalist wise. So.
And you know, my approach is this, that someone who really, really wants to understand what may actually be the physical mechanics behind paranormal phenomena is already someone who is willing to make the intellectual investment beyond what is the simple and superficial, which is what has dominated this field from its inception. So you're willing to take that extra intellectual step and say, well, you know, I want to go something beyond the, you know, the desire to be scared by watching, you know, Zach Bagan get possessed on, you know, TV, or laugh at it, or being amused, or getting excited when I hear the voice of the dead on the, you know, the tape recorder, and this and that and the other thing. If you want to know, hey, what is really going on? Is there, you know, what would be the physics behind something like this? Then you're already making that commitment to make that intellectual step further. And in fact, Jim, if you want, I'd like to talk about a little part of that new book.
Go ahead.
That I, when it comes to residual haunts.
Hit me.
Okay. So people see these residual, what we call residual haunts. Let's say you have this apparition. I'm going to take the lady in white because that's what we see a lot of times. So women, ladies dressed in white Victorian clothing seems to be a very common apparition. I understand in the United Kingdom, over in England, they see a lot of black dogs over there. We don't see so many.
Hmm.
We see the white Victorian ladies. And they see this apparition walk down this hallway occasionally, the exact same way, completely oblivious to what's going on around. The interior architecture of the building may have even been changed, so where there was a door before now is a solid wall, and they see the apparition walk right through the wall as if the door was still there. And the universal belief about that is that the event has somehow been quote-unquote recorded on the background, whatever that means. But if we stop and take a look at the facts, we find that that's not something that's really possible to the extent that we know. First of all, you have to consider whatever that quote-unquote background would be capable of doing. You know, some people have even said, well, it's got to do with water and the bedrock, you know, underneath the house and this, that, and the other thing. Okay. But if we take a look at the energy output that is being generated by the original Victorian lady 100 years ago, it's actually quite low. There's not very much energy output at all. In fact, you would have to get a very sensitive electromagnetic meter very close to a human body to detect the electromagnetic radiation that's being emitted from it. It's very low energy. When you couple that with the idea that the visual information, the actual appearance of the woman, is a result of reflected light, that the woman is not luminous, she is not emitting her own light. When the woman lived 100 years ago and walked down this hallway, her image can only be seen from reflected light, from photons, another form of electromagnetic radiation. You would have to have a material that would be, A, in the close enough proximity to be able to pick up the energy levels, real energy, not psychic energy or spirit energy or whatever those things are, but real energy, real electromagnetic radiation, you would have to have a material that would be sufficiently close to pick that up. It would also have to be able to record the information patterns of the woman's external geometry coming from the light waves that are reflected off of the image. So, for example, we talked about photography before, whereas a photograph, traditional photograph on film, is a recording of a light wave coming through the lens of the camera, carrying a modulation which contains information about the geometry of the object being photographed. When we break it down scientifically, this is what it is. We human beings take vision for granted so much, we don't even stop and think about it. We don't stop and think about it for example, that we're quite blind. No human being has ever seen anything in history. What we have seen is light that emanates or reflects off of those things. But we have never seen anything in our lives. And people don't stop and think about this because it's heady and weird and you know, like clocks running at different rates in different parts of the earth. And we just don't need it in our everyday lives. So here we have an electromagnetic compression wave, which is the light reflection off of the Victorian lady, carrying modulations, that's variations in the vibrations, carried on that main vibration or the wave of the electromagnetism. It's just like when we hear a radio broadcast, we have a carrier wave that's being broadcasted that carries on it modulations containing the music or the talk that is being transmitted. So the material would have to be able to pick this up, receive it, and store it, okay? And furthermore, it would have to store it over a very long period of time without degradation of the energy level or the information pattern. Now, right there, even though some people might be able to debate that or try to debate it, right there, that pretty much eliminates everything that's in the area of the hallway that the Victorian lady is walking around. Unless they just want to fantasize and say, well, somehow it's recorded here or somehow it's recorded there. And because I'm not scientific and could give a shit less about science, I don't have to explain how. All I have to do is say somehow, and the people who watch my TV programs or read my books or buy my materials, that somehow is good enough for them, and as long as it gives me a paycheck, I don't have to explain it any further. So now let's talk about the playback. 100 years later, the Victorian lady, the apparition, walks down the hallway. You would have to have a material, something on the background, that also, and now think about this, it doesn't have to just be, it has to be a storage battery, it has to be a storage medium for information, which is different than a battery. Those are two different things. But now it has to be a projector. And now it not only has to be a projector where it projects the information of that 100-year-old geometric pattern with perfect fidelity, but it also has to be an emitter or a generator that can regenerate an electromagnetic compression wave. Then it needs to be able to project a three-dimensional image in open space, without any kind of screen, without any kind of material, let's say, like a luminous suspension that might be activated by the electromagnetic compression wave carrying the information, like a holographic projector. And furthermore, not only does it have to suspend this image in open space, which is still something that's beyond our technology to do it as well as it gets done in the paranormal, but it also has to pan that information. It has to actually work like a panning projector, continuously moving the image, and not just a static pattern of information, but you actually see, it's not like seeing a picture go down a hall. It's actually a woman moving, walking. So you have an animation that has frame after frame after frame of information as the material projects this image down the hall. Now, I want anybody in the paranormal field to tell me what kind of material is present in the background that can do that.
So I was scribbling my questions for you on the side of my notes, so hopefully I can read them to you. Well, how would this... Okay, you said it's not like a battery, but how would it repeat? Or we, I mean, so it would have to repeat every day for the 100 years?
Oh, who knows?
Well, it's, I guess, it's, you know, I'm just sitting here going, you know, because if it repeated once a year, I mean, that has to store it longer. I mean, you know what I'm saying? There's so many variables there. I just wanted to say that out loud, I guess.
Well, I don't... I'm not including in this any part of any data that says that this apparition appears at a certain
period. Oh, no, no, I'm just thinking, you know, just trying to add elements to it that are right along through my mind as you're right along through that stuff. It's just, you know, as I'm trying to keep up. And then back to the earlier part where you're trying to capture it, you need some sort of a radar device to find it even, and then a sonar to send the information back so you could document it. Some really sort of, I mean, that sounds like way sophisticated, easy for me to say, equipment. I mean, because even if you know the spot, you're still going to have to, get it right there at the right time.
Amen. Amen, brother. And this is what the problem is with the paranormal field. That I don't think that anyone who I've ever talked to or heard about or read about in the paranormal community has ever stopped and to do what I've just done in a five-minute period of time. Let's think about all the physical attributes that would be necessary to record and then rebroadcast such an image in a moving way, with all the energy that can be stored and then reprojected, with all the information, the data that would have to be stored and remodulated on a compression wave, to have a three-dimensional image suspended in open space with no screen or projection screen that it can be shown up against, no emitter that would illuminate a signal sending to it. Like, say, for example, if you use certain types of ionized particles, if you suspended them in a cloud, in an atmosphere, so to speak, and then shown an electromagnetic wave through them, you can have those things illuminate. It would look like a glowing orb or something in the middle of space. But those things are not present, you know, in a two-bedroom dwelling where they're having a haunting in the hallway. These things are just not there. When you just start thinking about all of that, and I'm not talking about anything deep. I'm not talking about clocks moving at different, you know, times or, you know, the Big Bang. I'm talking about an understanding of the basic media that we're surrounded with every day. Recording devices, projecting devices, hard drives, monitors, movie projectors, TVs, you know, just the technology that we're surrounded with, based on that kind of a knowledge, there ain't a player in town, man. There's nothing inside of a house that can do that. And it ain't the bedrock underneath the house either, because that can't do it either.
No. I've heard that theory, and the running water kind of, temporarily made sense because of the, well, the energy, you know, the movement creates a force, but a rock isn't going to give you a projected image.
But where is the water? Where is the volume of water that is in that underwater stream or whatever it is? Where is the volume of water that was directly under the woman who was walking in that house 100 years ago? It's probably in the flipping Atlantic Ocean.
And here's the other thing I was just thinking about when you were saying that. If this theory, the running water theory that I was just kind of hashing through half-hearted here, is true, that means I should be able to go up to Niagara Falls and have the greatest show of my life.
Yeah, or I should see my dead Aunt Mary every time I flush my toilet. You know, and it sounds kind of, you know, I'm being kind of...
I know what you're being, but it's fine.
I'm extending
you made
I
your point.
It. You know, there's a five-letter word that everybody who's interested needs to understand and adopt. It's called T-H-I-N-K. Think, think, think. But for the vast majority of the paranormal community that consumes the media that paranormal personalities put out to that audience, they could care less. The idea that it's recorded on the background somehow is more than enough to get people excited, get them interested, get them buying books, get them buying K2 meters, get them doing all those things, get them to have, you know, the satisfaction of a good ghost story. Hey, I enjoyed reading Edgar Allan Poe, you know. I get that. But when you're going to start talking about what is actually causing this stuff, think. You have to think.
Yeah, and something tells me I'll be up late tonight thinking about these different things. But that's okay. I have time to do that, so.
Well, you know, like I always say, Jim, this is why I don't get invited to speak at Paracons.
No, really? What's my excuse?
I don't know. You have to provide the stage.
I don't have the as seen on YouTube on my banner. That's probably my problem.
Oh. But anyway, that was just one part of it. Now, what I do, normally what scientists do, is they use these arguments as a form of skepticism. So what they'll say, they'll present these kinds of very sound arguments, and then they'll say, well, because of this, it means that this phenomenon really doesn't exist. You know, you caught a spore of some psychedelic substance and you're hallucinating it, or, you know, all this kind of stuff. I don't say that. You know me. I accept that phenomenon as real. So what I'm saying is this, when we eliminate that kind of stuff as being a probable cause or even a possible cause, we have to start looking for causes elsewhere. There's got to be a better explanation. And so that's what drives the research. Scientifically analyzing these things, because, you know, as David and I both say, if it is observable, it is physical. If it is physical, it follows the laws and principles that govern the universe in which that physical event occurs. If it doesn't follow those laws and principles, then it's not that the event isn't occurring, it's that our understanding of those laws and principles is deficient in some way. And that's how paranormal phenomena, in our minds, is supposed to drive the research in science to come up with new ways of understanding reality so that we could have a set of mechanics that says, oh, yes, this is what could cause this kind of phenomenon.
So I guess you mentioned you were referring to residual haunts. So for just the one time, I mean, that changes the framework immensely. The one time somebody sees the one shadow and there's no backstory to that. So how much does that change the argument, I guess, for the lack of a better word?
Well, here's what's funny. If I understand what you're asking me, this is what I find almost comical, is that when we talk about active haunts, which I think that's what
you
might
pretty much where I'm headed. Yeah.
Right. The paranormal community has a completely different set of explanations for that. So what they're saying is that in a residual haunt and an active haunt, you would see the same kinds of manifestations, but yet there must be two different systems of mechanics that creates either one. They both appear identical, but there must be two sets of mechanics at work. There can't be the same set of mechanics that works in both. And it's laughable. It's funny.
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't see how... Just because you haven't seen it before doesn't mean necessarily it hasn't happened before to other people, or vice versa.
Yeah. I mean, if you were the first person to witness an apparition walking down the hallway in a certain place, you would not know whether it was a residual or an active haunt. You wouldn't know. So how would you determine what the mechanics behind it are? If you think there are two different sets of mechanics that can produce the exact same physical effect, it's kind of crazy when you really get into it. But most people don't want to think about it like this, Jim. They don't want to think into it like this.
I know.
It just destroys the fun. It's like I say, it's just like people riding a roller coaster and screaming and yelling, and somebody pulls out the service manual on the roller coaster to talk to the person next to them about how it works. They don't want to know that.
That's such a good analogy for it.
Fun. And that's fine. All I say is that don't kid yourself into thinking that you're talking about something scientifically, or you really are, you know, speaking knowledgeably about something. You're in it for the entertainment, you're in it for the thrill, you're in it for all those other things. You know, don't be a liar and represent yourself as something other than that. And don't lie to yourself that you think that you're looking at something scientifically when in reality you're just looking for pure satisfaction or entertainment. You could care less about the science.
So, Tom, you're going to love me. I remembered what we were going to talk about tonight, and this wasn't it.
Oh! Well, you ain't got too many minutes left, so you better whip it out quick, dude.
No, I don't even want to whip this out. I'm going to file this away again. We'll bring it back around some point. Don't worry. because I don't think we could open this can of worms and do it justice in a handful of minutes.
Okay.
We were going to talk about the religion end of things.
The religion end?
Yeah.
Oh!
And how it all plays into this. You know what? I'm gonna make time sometime here in the next couple weeks, and we're gonna just do that as a standalone podcast, because I'm pretty sure an hour won't cut that, even if we had another hour.
Well, it's a subject, Jim, that I rarely get a chance to speak about on the radio, and with a lot of hosts and a lot of radio programs, I wouldn't even go into it. I've had a few programs where they wanted to talk about that, and I told the host, nope. I'm not going to talk about that on your show.
Okay, well, but we'll do it.
But you, I will. I could talk about that on your show.
Okay, well, yeah, we have that understanding of each other. But like I said, we'll get that set up here in the next couple of weeks, and we'll just sit down and do it. And however,
you know, and your audience is a better audience than some of these other shows where I wouldn't talk about this.
I totally agree with that, because a few weeks ago I offered a signed K2 meter to the highest bidder, and I didn't get anybody that wanted it.
Mm-hmm.
That just tells you what kind of audience I have.
Yeah, you got a better audience than, you know, and I don't mean to talk against anybody else's shows, but you know.
I will.
You all know what we're talking about. There are certain shows that are definitely woo-woo,
yeah.
You know, and the woo-woo shows, I'm not going to talk about that kind of stuff on it.
Okay, Tom, like I said, I didn't want to open that can of worms because we're running out of time. So do you have anything else coming up in the next couple days, weeks, besides, well, go ahead, promote the symposium again.
Just Paradigm Symposium, man, that's it. You know, other than that, just keeping on doing interviews as they come and trying to get my writing done. Writing is excruciating for me. People are surprised to find out that I hate to write.
I'm not. We've talked about it before, so it doesn't surprise
me. No, I mean, the best part of writing, folks, is when it's done, man. Trust me.
And for my listeners who don't know exactly, where can people find your book and all that fun stuff?
Oh, and I'll put it in the chat room, too. Everything can be found at www.cosmicveil. That's spelled, the veil part is spelled V-E-I-L, as one word, cosmicveil.com.
All right. Where'd it go? Hold on. Well, I want to thank you for coming on. I'm going to hang up on you and do the sponsor read, and then I'll be out. So thanks, Tom. We'll get that set up.
All right, Jim. God bless. As always, thanks so much for having me on your show, man.
Thank you for coming on, Tom.
Make me
look good. So that's all that matters.
Oh, okay.
And that's Tom Fusco. Tonight's sponsor is Spectrum Light, the best IR boosters available. Works wonderfully well with Sony Nightshot cameras. Visit SpectrumState.com or follow Spectrum State on Twitter at AU Paranormal. Tell them the Mallard Report sent you. With that, where did my timer go? There it is. I have precisely a few seconds left. That's good. Next week on the Mallard Report, I have the psychic lawyer Mark Anthony returning. You know, another good guest, a solid guest, been on Coast to Coast, been on a number of programs. Any program you want to mention, he's been on. I'm not exactly sure what Mark wants to talk about. Normally, I get Mark off topic of his talking points, so we'll see where it all ends up. With that being said, everybody, have a good night.
Well, before we flip that on-air sign to the off position, a quick reminder. For all things about the report, previews, and reviews, go to italkparanormal.com. That's italkparanormal.com. Good night.
If you're looking for a radio show where all things paranormal go, well, tune in and be in the know with Jim Mallard as your host.
Get connected with Take Two Radio on Facebook or Twitter at Take Two Radio. For email updates on future shows, follow at Blog Talk Radio. For previous episodes, upcoming guests, and more, visit TakeTwoRadio.com.